Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. Well, today I will be interviewing writer-director Michael Dougherty, who created the very successful Firefly fan film Brown Coats Redemption and has a movie in the works right now. I think I have him on the line. Let me check here. Okay. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Too bad.
Well, I'm going to dive right in with questions. Thing is, I want to talk first about Brown Coats Redemption. What was it about Firefly that made you decide to create a fan film?
Honestly, it was just kind of a kismet thing. It was, I had never made a movie before, never written a script. And then a guy that became the co-producer and co-creator, Stephen Fisher, came up to me one day. He's like, have you ever thought of making a Firefly fan film? It's like, no, but now we're going to do it. And then literally that was about as much thought that went into the process that there was. And the minute that he had said something, ideas started growing, and we went right into it.
So you must have had a lot of challenges being this was your first project. What do you think was the hardest part of creating the whole film?
I would honestly say each part was equally difficult. I mean, I did a lot of research, and I think I probably read every How to Write a Screenplay book out there.
Mm-hmm.
The one that was the most important to me was a book that's called Your Screenplay Sucks. And it is literally the 100 rules that you can make, 100 rules to not make your screenplay terrible. And the middle section, the middle third, is all about format and things. So that was crucial for me. Learning how to put production schedules together. I think if we did this movie 10 years ago, it probably wouldn't be what it was because I got to leverage the internet as much as possible. eHow.com is my friend.
And you created this for charity, too, and you raised over $117,000. How did you choose the charities that you benefited?
For Redemption, what we did is the cast of Firefly are all extremely charitable people. Nathan Fillion co-founded Kids Need to Read with PJ Harzma, mm-hmm. sci-fi author. Josh has been public about supporting Equality Now. So he chose charities that were tied to the TV show itself, mainly to the actors that played the characters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's how we picked them.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's how we picked them.
Okay. And your success is probably mostly due to your marketing. What did you do to market this film?
We went as grassroots as you possibly could. If there was a convention that would have us, we went. I spent hours on social media just interacting with tons of people all over the world. The biggest success from this came from just face-to-face marketing and people seeing how passionate we were and then taking that passion and sharing it out with their community, and word kind of spread that way.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find your cast?
We got really lucky is that our lead actress, Heather Fagan, initially came on as the casting director and said, I will only be casting director if you allow me to audition for this role. And I was like, fine, mm-hmm. you can audition, but you're going through the process like everybody else. And we chose Heather as casting director because she's done modeling and acting, and she knew that process a hell of a lot better than I did. And my philosophy is get people smarter than you.
Right.
And you will learn. So she went and put the message out, and next thing you know, we're doing about, I don't know, anywhere from like 50 to 60 people a day for auditions for two weekends in a row. And then she did her own auditions, and we kind of put her to the work task, and she rose to the challenge.
How long did you shoot?
We did 11 days over 3 months.
Wow. Did you do it on the weekends, mostly because of people's schedule, or did you do it during the week?
Yeah,
how did you work that?
That's pretty much all it was. We all had full-time jobs that we were working during the day. I mean, fortunately, some of us got to have Fridays off, but we spent a lot of time just getting Friday night prepped, shooting Saturday and Sunday till as late as we possibly could, and then leaving. And,
mm-hmm.
and that over the course of it was like April, June, July is when we filmed everything.
Wow. And you had a really extensive set for the ship. Tell us a little bit about that set building process and how you worked that out.
That, I think, was, if anything, that was probably the biggest challenge. I mean, even though we used a Red One as the camera, the set construction was the biggest challenge because we had a lot of people who were very passionate about seeing it come to life and had a lot of really creative ideas, and that's where leadership really kind of kicked in more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of chiefs and not a lot of Indians when it comes to people wanting to build a spaceship.
Right. How long did it take to build that set?
About 30 volunteers. We got really lucky.
How long?
Mm-hmm. Probably over the course of the cargo bay set, which was about 40 feet long by 32 feet, or 16 feet wide and 32 feet high, took about a month and a half. And then the rest of the ship took another month and a half. So we were really fortunate that St. John's Properties donated a warehouse space large enough for us to do everything we needed. And people like Bruce and Dan,
mm-hmm.
Extras who happened to be free of work during that time, thankfully worked 24/7, where the rest of us got to come in the evenings and weekends. And everybody pitched in. If we weren't filming, we were building.
And tell us about your other location. Most of it was filmed.
We got really lucky with everything. I will not lie. Frontier Town, which is a Western theme park
mm-hmm.
in Ocean City, Maryland, donated their space for the month of April prior to them opening. And we got full run of the place, and it was insane. So we
got
to use, like, we basically used the entire elephant. If there was a space that we could use on there that we could, we did. And
mm-hmm.
that entire location takes up about, I'd say, 55% of the locations in the film.
Right.
And came about because, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
That came about because I had gone there from ages like 10 to 16 with the family, and it was so ingrained in my brain that when you think of a Western sci-fi film, that was the first place I thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And we got really, really fortunate. They were like, yeah, sure, come on, it's all for charity.
Great. Did you have a fight coordinator for your fight scene, or was it kind of, how did you work that out?
I was really specific in the script with what I wanted to see, like a lot of specific beats, but then we had a gentleman by the name of Malachi McCoy who came
mm-hmm.
in and worked with our lead actors and actresses to get the final fight scene kind of streamlined and take the bits that I needed and put like little pieces of awesome between them so that it just flowed into one nice fight scene.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the whole movie, was the fight scene.
Oh, thank you.
What about wardrobe?
Where
did you get wardrobe for this?
My wife was the costume designer, and the reason I chose her was not just because she was my wife, but because she actually went to Fashion Institute of Technology. And between designing a few things, and a lot of it came from going to like Salvation Army and Goodwill and kind of piecing things
mm-hmm.
together, and she had a really good eye for it. There's like one character's costume that I kind of vetoed at first, but everybody really loved it, so it stayed. But majority of that was just really creative ways of using a very small budget.
How did you raise money initially for the movie?
We didn't. A lot of it was just
your own money?
Yeah, we did. We put a lot of it out as it was needed. Fortunately, like the biggest costs, like sets and things like that, were donated. But anything that was needed either came out of our pockets or the people that volunteered and stayed the longest started saying, well, you need bread and food, so I'll go get that, or you need some more wood, so I'll go get that. It really became a community of people working together to make this happen, not just a normal film with the budget and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And there was, tell me a little bit about, I know there was an agreement with Firefly, you could only sell it for so long, like how did that work?
So what happened when the film first came about and an idea, I was like, all right, if we're going to do this for charity, we really need to make sure our I's are dotted and T's are crossed. So we called
mm-hmm.
20th Century Fox and Mutant Enemy, who is Joss's company for
mm-hmm.
Dollhouse and everything else. And it took a little bit longer to get Mutant Enemy on the line, but we finally got Fox, and Fox was like, we can't figure out how to fit you into our little bubble of no, because we're not using... We're not using the original cast as the characters and their main character roles. We're basically creating everything from scratch, and we're giving everything away to charity, so nobody's making a profit. And what we had done had never really been done before, so they were pretty much in a position where they said, as long as you do not make a profit from this in any way and you're willing to keep your books open, we're completely fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took some negotiations with attorneys and making sure that what they said was true and that we're not going to have a situation 2 years later. But what they did is they said, okay, you can only do 1 year from the time that you launch it to from 1 year for that date for it to be available, or 32,000 units, whichever comes first. We could only do so many copies of the DVD, only so many versions of a T-shirt, and it was really, really limiting on what we could and couldn't do. But as far as Joss's camp goes, they were really happy, and they said whatever we needed to do, just go ahead and do it. And as long as Fox was okay, they were okay.
And one of the charities was his charity, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, as I thought. You'd mentioned about how this went to the convention circuit everywhere, and your next movie takes place in a convention, and it's called ZCon. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Absolutely. That project kind of bore out of traveling around from convention to convention, ranging from all different sizes across the country, promoting Redemption. And I just mm-hmm. noticed that people were more and more dressing as zombies cosplay. And then I frequently got what's known as con cred, where mm-hmm. 2,000 people are touching the same doorknob, and that one person that happens to have the cold and didn't wash their hands passes it on to everybody else.
Yeah.
So then two ideas merged together, and over the course of a year while we were making Redemption and promoting it, the story kept kind of percolating in my brain, and I'd talk about it with people, and they'd want to see it. So then I've always been a big fan of, you know, the Goonies and Monster Squad mm-hmm. and any movie that's where the kids are kind of smarter than the adults.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, we don't see that very much often. You know, Super 8 came out, and that was really exciting to prove that people are still mm-hmm. interested. And that's kind of a story. I'm like, all right, well, what if we did that with kids and zombies and social media? Because you can't tell a story with kids today without having some kind of technology involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are. It was, you know, right on the cusp of Redemption coming to a close. We had our wrap party at Dragon Con in 2011. And then I'm like, all right, it's time to do something new. So
you called it Goonies meets Shaun of the Dead.
That's
right?
A comic book convention, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Goonies in the sense that it's about four kids, and Shaun of the Dead in the sense that when you watch Shaun of the Dead, it's not so much about the zombies, but about watching these people kind of go through the realization that, oh, crap, zombies are there.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets back to what a Romero story is really more about, which is more about the people than the random zombie attacks. And those are the
right.
kind of stories I like.
So are you inspired by, Night of the Living Dead also for this as far as storyline? Is that what you're saying?
I'm inspired by Romero stories mainly because he focuses on the story of the people, not necessarily
mm-hmm.
just the massive, when's the next time and what's the most creative way somebody is going to be attacked by a zombie.
And how are your zombies? Are they a little different than usual? Are they the really fast zombies? Are they the slow zombies? What kind of take are you taking on the zombies?
My idea is kind of an amalgamation of everything that we've seen. It's the idea is that when you first get turned into a zombie, you haven't started decaying like we normally see them, so you still have you're not going to become superhuman and super fast, but you're normal, but you're just really
mm-hmm.
hungry. And the longer you go without feeding, or the less you feed, the more you'll become that slow, shambling zombie all the way down to the more your body gets damaged. It's pretty much like I worked with three virologists to make sure that the science of this was, you know, still plausible but still science fiction.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
And to keep this in science fact, it's that, you know, as long as your body isn't taking proteins, the body will keep moving forward. And the more that starts deteriorating, the more your body will deteriorate until you just pretty much stop moving. So there's multiple phases of zombies during the course of the film.
Great. That sounds exciting. That sounds a little different. Okay. And do you know what charity this is going to yet?
We do. It's the American Red Cross, of course, tied with a blood drive.
Okay.
Kids Need to Read, which is the same charity we picked last time. But, you know, I want to try to make sure that the charities are connected in some way to either the story that we're telling or some kind of initiative that we're trying to get across.
Mm-hmm.
And the third charity, we did something completely different, which was on our website, we put out a call to say, you know, submit a charity and then vote for it for over 30 days. And the one with the most votes is our third charity. So we really allowed the community to kind of speak their voice and say what they wanted. And what was chosen was something kind of interesting, because out of all the national charities that were up for votes, the Baltimore Bully Crew, which their mission is to find, rescue, and rehabilitate dogs that were put through dogfighting and put them into families.
Wow.
So because of that, we're now incorporating one of their pups into the story as the family dog.
Oh, okay.
So
that's cute.
Yeah. We found that last time we had five charities, and while it was really great to help five charities, this time it was like, let's get a little bit more manageable and take this down to something about three, which we figured we could still maintain, we could still do some good, and it would still allow us to kind of spread the word about multiple charities simultaneously.
And being that this is a brand new story, you don't have to deal with like 20th Century Fox or anything on this one.
Oh, no.
So that must
the
be
amount
nice.
Of freedom that we have on this one is amazing. Like, I'm not having to go to lawyers and say, can we get this approved? I'm not having to, like, wait weeks long and weeks and delaying everybody else to say yes or no. I really love the freedom of this. And that was why we decided to go with an original story this time around instead of, like, we've been optioned a couple times to go for a couple different licensed stories to do the same thing we did on Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, after playing in that sandbox of dealing with attorneys, I want to do something clean and fresh in mine.
Yeah. You still have to go through some sort of paperwork, I imagine, being that you're a nonprofit, right?
Oh, yeah, but a lot of that's already been set up. I mean, we've been in business mm-hmm. for about 4 years now, so a lot of the nonprofit stuff that we have is really just kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's every year that's become normal and routine for us. But it's not, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's and, oh, you can't do, like, spending a lot of time designing T-shirts or ideas and then getting them told no. That's the biggest
thing. Yeah. When are you casting for this?
We're going to be doing casting probably around the end of September, early October. We're going to shoot a teaser, just basically a sizzle reel to kind of give people the idea of what this thing's going to look like around middle of October. And then mm-hmm. from that, we'll start doing full casting.
Where are you shooting at?
Primarily here in Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. How would people find out about your casting?
So what they'll do is they'll either go to our website, which is zconmovie.com. They could go to our Facebook and Twitter accounts, which are both zconmovie. Or keep an eye out, because just like we did last time, we're going to put it out on Craigslist, Model Mayhem, all the places that actors and models can go to find casting.
Okay. It was interesting because on Kickstarter, where you have a campaign up there, you had a campaign for $250,000 and you fell short, and then it looks like you restarted another campaign and you went over. What do you think about the Kickstarter? Do you think it's been effective for you, or do you think you're going to go a different route next time?
We're going to go a different route next time, and that's only because Kickstarter has a really strong policy of you cannot mention charity and you cannot raise money for charity in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't
really
matter that, yeah. It doesn't matter that what we were raising money for ultimately was to make a movie that was a final product, which fit within their guidelines. But because we took that product and then used it to raise money for charity, they were like, no. So then what we did, what we did the first time around is I had seen Amanda Palmer's Kickstarter campaign, a lot of the big Kickstarter campaigns that were going around that were raising hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm like, we don't need that much. We need like $250,000, $300,000 maybe. So I put it up there, and I kind of didn't realize the part of Kickstarter that they don't advertise. While it really is about, you know, helping you raise money, it's really about networking, and it's really about getting your community that you have built in there to help raise awareness. So unless you're like a big-name celebrity or you've got something in there that's going to draw media attention, you've really got to work it. So the first Kickstarter campaign was kind of like a trial of errors to see what worked and what didn't. Then we scaled it back and said, okay, what do we need to do to get started? So we needed about, you know, $20,000 to get pre-production ready, to get effects tests, to get costume tests, to start doing casting, all the prep work that actually goes into filming. So I was like, all right, we can do that. So we went and created the second campaign, and we got that started, and that was successful. That raised about $27,000. But as far as what we would do again, because we do a lot of charity work, unless we stick to just doing something that is like a one-off, like right now we're doing pre-production, where there's no charity model tied to it, we may use them again. But we may, I think we'll try Indiegogo the next time around if we have something that does definitely have a charity model associated, because they don't seem to mind.
So right now you're going to be able to keep your money. That's not a problem, right?
Yeah, it's not a problem. I mean, I worked with Kickstarter to say, look, what we're doing right now is really just getting the movie started. We're getting a pre-production piece done. There's no charity component to what we're doing now. And they're like, okay, no problem. But our initial video mentioned redemption, mentioned how much we had raised, where the money had gone, and why this is kind of, you know, something that you should back. And we had to strip all of that away. So, like, we had to take about, you know, a good minute of the heart of what we had done out of the story, which was kind of really disheartening.
Yeah, really. Is there a way that people can still contribute to your project in another way if they want to?
Absolutely. Our website, zconmovie.com, you can go and you could get one of the pre-production shirts. All the proceeds from the T-shirts really just go back into the company to start making the movie. And then we'll have some more shirts and some more posters. We hired an amazing artist, Adam Levermore, who had done work for Felicia's Day of the Guild, Zachary Levi's Nerd Machine, and a bunch of stuff that you've probably seen around if you're a geek into like Serenity posters and fun stuff like that, as our art director. So he's going to be doing some more T-shirts and things. That all of those proceeds will, A, be a tax-deductible donation, and B, be additional ways that you could support. Or we have a link on our website that you could donate directly to the project through PayPal.
Okay. Have you thought about going the comic book route with any of your projects?
I had. I thought it would be a nice kind of prequel story for ZCon, just to tell the story of what happens. Because when the movie starts, you're kind of already into the mix of things. But I thought it would be an interesting comic book to kind of tell the story of what happens a few minutes before, or what happens when you're not looking at certain characters.
Yeah, being that you're so involved in the convention circuit, and that's kind of the audience, is the comic book crowd, seems like a good idea to me.
Oh, I don't disagree. I think I might borrow the idea, if that's okay.
You've got it. It's all yours.
Sweet.
So right now people can just go to your website to find out what's going on with ZCon, right? And about Brown Coats, is there any way that they can see it still, or is it completely shut off at this point?
Some conventions are still showing it. It's just a matter of if more people are asking for it, it'll start appearing in different places. We have a longstanding rule that we are allowed to show it at whatever theater wants to show it. But we can't sell it anymore. It's really odd. Like, we can keep telling people about it and showing the movie, but we can't do anything with it outside of that. So that, or some people are, if they've seen the movie and want to keep cycling it around, some people are putting it up for donation on eBay. I don't necessarily approve, but I can't really, you know, say no, because they're associating. Basically what they do is they go on and say the proceeds from this go to Kids Need to Read. So nobody's still making a profit off of it.
Okay, I gotcha. Is there any other website that you want to give people that they can check out something about you, or anything like that, Facebook, et cetera?
I have been terrible about promoting myself. So at the moment, no. Well, you could go to bigdamfilms.org, which is our main website for the company. And then that's where we're going to post, like, if you want to be an intern or anything like that. But as far as me specifically, I think I need to get better on my personal brand.
Well, hopefully this will be a start for you now that we're doing this radio show.
I agree.
Anything else that you'd like to say to directors that are brand new? Any advice that you want to give to them about starting something like this?
Oh, my God, tons.
Okay.
I would definitely say, first, leave your ego at the door. If you're new, there's always going to be people who know more than you, and those are the people you want to work with, because you're going to learn so much faster than if you got somebody working with you that knows just as much as you do. I am a big proponent of get somebody that has been in the industry and just ask them as many questions as you can. I mean, we got really lucky on Redemption that Our lighting guy, Eric Manchester, had worked on major films like Hush with Gwyneth Paltrow and different films like that. So he was able to kind of work me through some of the lighting process. We had a camera guy for a weekend, a gentleman by the name of Pal Beal, who worked with James Cameron on Avatar for the motion capture because we used a red one. And just getting his insight and knowledge, anybody that you can talk to, just talk to them and get them to help and stay passionate, because as long as you're passionate for good reasons, people will always help. If you're passionate because you think you deserve it, you're not going to get as much attention.
Right.
But be genuine about it. Don't be like fake passionate just because you think people are going to listen to you. And then take care of your, the last bit of advice would be take care of your people. I mean, it's amazing how much a bottle of water and a thank you will go to get you a couple more hours of work or, you know, just that extra thing that you need. If you take care of your people, they will take care of you, because ultimately without all of those people helping you, you're just on your own.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, anything, any last words about any of your projects or anything that you'd like to say before we go?
The only thing that I'd like to say is if you're in the Atlanta area, the first weekend of September, we're going to be at Dragon Con, which is down there. We're doing a panel, which could get you in the movie. And then we're also, I'm DJing the zombie prom, which is just fun.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you for being on the show today, Michael.
Well, thank
I'll
you for taking the time.
Once VCon is in the process, maybe I can bring you back at some point and we can talk more about how that went.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll
talk
to you soon.
You got it.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was an enlightening conversation with Michael Dougherty, and he went through all the basics of what he went through with these projects, Browncoats Redemption and his new movie, VCon, which we'll definitely be looking forward to. It sounds excellent. Anybody that's been in the convention center is going to get a kick out of it because, you know, especially because most of the convention center goers are also zombie fans, and combine that with actually being in a convention center, it sounds like a lot of fun to me. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that movie. Okay, guys, well, thank you for tuning in today. And if you missed any portion of this show today, like I said, you can always go back and listen to the archives, like I always say on this program. And you can hear it again and again until you can't hear it anymore. Just listen to all the archives, and you can hear everybody I've interviewed. They're here on demand for free on my website here on blogtalkradio.com/IndieStreak, where you are listening right now. Like I said before, if you've been a longtime listener to the show, this show has been nominated for a Women in the Arts Award, and I would really appreciate it if you would vote for me. Voting is still open, and I need your votes. Just go to Women in the Arts Miami, womeninthearts.miami.com, and then go to vote, and they basically send you, you have to register, and then they send you a link, and then you go to the link and look for Best Web Show, and I am Indie Streak. So just vote for me, okay? And I would appreciate it. Also, on Facebook, look for our Indie Streak site on Facebook, and please like the site because I will be posting ongoing information on there, castings, etc. Sometimes they are based in Florida. Most of the time they're in Florida, but I do have elsewhere as well. Being that I'm in Florida, I try to keep it mostly here, but I do have stuff in Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, you name it. So keep an eye out for that site and make sure to like it. And I will be back next week interviewing someone new. I'm not going to give you the whole lowdown of all my websites today. I'm going to try to stop doing that because I just ramble on with all my websites. But if you listen to any of my other shows, you can get all that information. But if you are a producer, writer, director, et cetera, that would like to be on the show, please feel free to email me. My email address is ravenprods, ravenprods, @yahoo.com. And let me know a little bit about you and see if it works for you to be on the show. Okay, but I thank you for tuning in today. And like I said, I'll be back next week at 1 o'clock, same time and same channel. Okay, guys, I will talk to you then. Bye-bye.